This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Julian and Shaoning. And household debt grew by a modest 4.7% in 2018, slower than nominal GDP to settle at 83% of the GDP by the end of 2018. Now, Fitch Ratings points out that this follows a raft of regulations to tighten underwriting practices for banks and non-bank lenders over 2010 and 2013 in response to mounting leverage and rising risk appetites at the time.
And they also think that the Malaysia's household debt will continue to moderate, but there will still be pockets of risk that is lingering around. These pockets of risk will remain in banks and non-banks' exposures to lower-income households.
The household sector accounts for roughly 58% of banks' gross loans. About 37% of these loans is to actually low-income borrowers, those that earn less than 5,000 ringgit a month. And lower-income borrowers account for 58% of household loans taken from non-banks compared to 38% of loans from banks. Now, Fitch also noted there has been an increase in bankruptcies.
So for more insights into this, we speak to Elaine Koh, Director of APAC Financial Institutions at Fitch Ratings. Thank you for joining us, Elaine. Now, Fitch has indicated that it expects unemployment to remain steady and, by extension, repayment ability. So despite this, you have rated the impact of household debt on Malaysia's ratings as neutral negative. Why not just say neutral?
Neutral is still our base case. That's our expectation for the moment. However, we do see that there are some vulnerabilities. We do see that there are some downside risks. Perhaps the probability of these risks are rising or getting harder to call, and therefore we capture this in the neutral negative rating impact.
And what sort of granular data do you look at to come to such sentiments that this is turning negative? Is it cost of living? And what about wages?
The first factor we focus on is household income. And, you know, the factors that you pointed out, in terms of wages, that's still growing quite steadily. Employment, that's still growing quite steadily. So those are supportive factors. And that's behind our central scenario of a neutral call. The first factor we focus on, again, is in household income. That's the primary source of debt service for most households. So just some historical reference points. If we look back at the Asian financial crisis, household disposable income fell by close to 10% in a single year, on top of all the other issues facing the economy at the same time. And, of course, the banks were deep in the red in the worst year during the crisis. Bank Negara has put out very similar estimates based on their models, which suggests that a 10% reduction in household income today would put the banks in loss-making territory, which would mean capital impairment. Now, that might come through an increase in the unemployment rate. That can also come through wage cuts. That's not our expectation for the moment, but, you know, again, capturing some of these downside risks, that's where we think risks are more skewed towards the negative rather than to the positive at this stage.
At what point should we be concerned given the economic uncertainties and our also slowing GDP growth?
Yeah, so we expect GDP growth to slow, but right now only modestly. Our forecasts are for GDP growth to slow to about 4.5%, coming from 4.7% last year. So that's really a modest slowdown. We mentioned some of the numbers earlier about, you know, some of these very severe, in our view, very severe scenarios of household incomes falling by 10% per year, banks, you know, being loss-making in those scenarios. You know, those are very severe scenarios. We think something maybe even half that would already be quite painful for the banks and the economy. But we look at those data points as a reference when we think about, you know, what the potential cost could be in various scenarios.
So, Elaine, in your view, what more could be done to curb personal loans and lending by non-banks? And this is in terms of Bank Negara policy, for example, or civil servant guidelines. What's your view on this?
Yeah, I have to be really careful here because nothing I say should be construed as advice. We are not allowed to give advice as a ratings agency. But what I can do is perhaps compare it with what we see in other higher-rated jurisdictions. One example, for instance, there is a de facto 60% cap on debt service ratios for civil servant borrowers. And data shows that, you know, for this group of borrowers, many are really quite close to this cap. In higher rated jurisdictions, 60% would be considered quite high. Some places also impose DSR caps on all consumer loans, whereas in Malaysia, the regulator takes the approach of allowing the banks some leeway to exercise their own judgment. You know, there are pros and cons to both approaches, and that's outside of the civil service program. So, you know, that's not to say that Malaysia should adopt any of these approaches, because we think policies should suit local circumstances. And regulators also need to take into account the risk of over-tightening. But, you know, outside of these regulatory controls, what we find tends to reduce the risks from household debt are, you know, firstly, more stable and sustainable property price trends, because these tend to be the levers that drive consumers to gear up more. Secondly, higher household incomes in general, because that improves debt service capacity, and it also allows households to accumulate savings buffers to tide through any financial dislocation for them. And finally, better personal financial education. This can include, for instance, certain customer disclosure requirements during the loan application process, so borrowers can see what the impacts would be if circumstances change. So looking through all this, we think that the regulator is aware of all these factors. The issue is that bringing about change really takes time. So we're saying that, you know, the direction is probably, you know, a favorable one. It's a healthy adjustment in the household debt situation. But we're not out of the woods yet.
Thank you so much. And that was Elaine Koh from Fitch Ratings. Now, she mentioned household incomes. And one of the things to watch for, actually, from the report that's been highlighted is also the fact that Bank Negara estimates a 10% fall in household income, which could weaken consumption and GDP growth, as well as broadening potential losses. Now, the Prime Minister, Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, has also said recently that the government is looking to reduce bureaucracy in terms of doing business in Malaysia. And this was decided at the third meeting of the Economic Action Council yesterday, in which ease of doing business was on the main agenda.
So the EAC actually advised the administration to slash the lengthy approval processes that businesses and investors need to go through in Malaysia. Dr. Mahathir, also, who's also the chairman of EAC, has instructed the chief secretary to the government, Dato Sri Dr. Ismail Bakar, to reduce the number of processes, starting with the construction sector.
Yes, the chief secretary is going to undertake a comprehensive review of permit approvals for infrastructure projects. The Prime Minister also highlighted the necessity to cut through the red tape in the construction sector in order to boost economic growth and job creation.
Yeah, so some of the other suggestions provided by the EAC also are to do with making the approval process more efficient for businesses as well as investors. And they include identifying a full workflow chart of the whole process to get a project or investment approved, and allowing agencies involved to expedite the approval of a process under their purview without having to wait for the approval of other agencies.
So there is an index which tracks this as the Ease of Doing Business Index, and Malaysia ranks about 15 out of 190. And this is not bad, right? 15 out of almost 200 countries. Mm-hmm. We are up there at the top. But if you look at the top five, New Zealand, Singapore, Denmark, Hong Kong, and South Korea, New Zealand, it's easy to do business. New Zealand actually tops Singapore as far as this is concerned.
I'm surprised.
Surprised, actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we all know Singapore has a very open economy and encourages a lot of business. So the criteria used in this ranking is of the 190 countries that were ranked. They ranked them in terms of protecting minority interests, dealing with construction permits, getting electricity, for example. But in terms of how we rank for trading across borders, we are only 48, Malaysia. For paying taxes, we are 72nd. And 122 in starting a business, which is actually rather low.
Yeah, I remember when the latest Doing Business Index was launched, and it's actually quite an interesting situation because this ease of doing business, so ranking 15th out of 190 countries, it's not uniform necessarily within even here within Malaysia in terms of population demographics. Because, for example, actually one of the most difficult it is not as easy for you to do business here in Malaysia as it would be for a Muslim man or a woman of another ethnic background, because Muslim women, for example, need to get their husband's approval in some cases to start a business. So that adds to the extra layers of approvals that they need to of hoops they need to jump through before they are able. Yes, here in Malaysia.
I thought it would only apply in a place like Saudi Arabia. This is news to me.
Yeah, so this is one of the things that the Doing Business Index tracks. So it's quite an interesting report to take a look at.
And aside from that, India is also jumping into this ease of doing business bandwagon. Narendra Modi, the newly minted prime minister, who just won a landslide election, has asked his government departments to make India a 5 trillion economy. And one way to do this is to reduce the red tape and the bureaucracy in India. I mean, 5 trillion, I think China is about 10 trillion. That's half of China.
And that is all the corporate news we have for you for the moment. We are coming up on the 8 o'clock news. And after that, Shanning, you're going to be speaking to Raymond Lim, head of country at Airbus Malaysia. That's happening after the 8 o'clock news. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.